United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned.
I mean, we can't go on. That's why we're in a very wrong world. talking about the accident. Your IRS stuff is confidential unless you give it out, right?
Stuff that they were asking these organizations for was completely beyond the pale.
South Carolina, you're up. Ellis, he's there. You guys are up. I was having problems. Hey, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
No problem.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Ellis, I was having problems, guys. I'm sorry. I was trying, and it just wouldn't act right.
We apologize for everything. I mean, we had blank screens, and
oh.
Tracy's pulling her hair out. And,
that's okay.
I was getting ready to
hurt the music,
I thought a shoe was
coming
across
online.
The table at it.
What did you say?
I was saying as long as I heard the music, I knew I was still on the air.
You're there, and I'm glad you called in because I'm still trying to pull up a machine to get the phone numbers. What happens when we lose technology? Are we going to be lost?
No, we're done.
How do we function? Hey, Ellis, I see you have a 313. That's the D, ain't it?
Yes, I'm born and bred.
A born and bred conservative in the D?
Yes, and you know.
Hold up. Now, do you know what Detroit is?
Yes, I do.
You know, they imported me to come talk about McCain.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, because they couldn't find, people in the
right.
D.
Right.
You can't be in Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah,
there's no way to be.
I'm just outside across the border in a city called Grosse Pointe, but most of my life I was born, educated, and raised, and up until last year attended church in Detroit. Actually, my former pastor was Obama's pastor, Reverend Jeremiah Wright's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, after that last election, is it Tracy?
Yeah,
Tracy, after that last election, I had to change.
Do you know that conservative and Detroit don't go in the same sentence?
I know. It's crazy. And you can imagine what kind of life. I've almost been living like in a bunker most of my life. I'm 51 now and don't have most of my friends have walked away from me. Even family members don't speak.
Oh, that's bad.
In the church, I just had to leave my church after this last election. And so it's kind of hard. I tell my kids now, I have two kids, a son, 16, his name is Stone, and I have a little daughter, 11, her name is Eden. I told them, I have to have kids so I can have friends.
Now I go to Detroit up there. I go to the church up there in Detroit.
Yeah,
I go to church there. And so I don't know. I'm quite sure Styx did not tell you that. I go up there to Perfecting Church, and I've been there 17, 18 years. And so I commute back and forth.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, conservative in Detroit in the same sentence, hey, guy, I applaud you because they, put me out at, sundown.
Right, exactly.
So
but what they do? They just act like, I call myself, my name is Ellis, but I call myself Tim. Tim being an acronym for the invisible man. So they just treat me like I don't exist. I'm invisible. My law blog, which has gotten over 1 million hits in less than 2 years, that doesn't matter. But I'm still just plugging along because I'm trying to bring Detroit and to another degree America back to sanity, back to realism, back to the original intent of our founding fathers.
What side of Detroit do you live on?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last question.
You want to know where you live, and where do you live in Detroit?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you live in Michigan?
On the west side.
I was born on the east side, near Jefferson, a street called Montclair, near between Jefferson and Charlevoix. And then after the riot in 67, white flight took place, and so we were able to move to the quote-unquote good side of town. So I moved to the northwest side around Livernois and Seven Mile area.
Oh man, I used to live over off of North Lawn. That's right off of Greenfield.
Right, that's amazing. Well, you was just very close to where I lived. A lot.
South Carolina. Oh, yeah. They kicked you out of Detroit.
Oh, they kicked me out quick.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, brother. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
Mr. Ellis Washington on with me, and he is a blogger on WMD. And Styx went and found him, and he did a very, very interesting article on African-American obsession with sports, Hollywood, and acceptance. And so now that I have him on and we are in the heat of a hot D.C., we'll get to the celebrity part of it, but let's get to the acceptance and the – I know you've seen the comments of Julian Bond.
Oh, God. You know what, Tracy? This is going to blow your mind.
You agree with it?
30-plus years ago, I graduated from DePaul University, DePauw, not to be confused with the school in Chicago, which is DePaul, DePaul. I went to DePaul in Greencastle, Indiana. Guess where Julian Bond went?
Same place?
Yes, of course, many decades earlier. And I just heard Vernon Jordan on the radio just before getting on radio with you. He's a great civil rights champion and lawyer, D.C. lawyer, best friend of Bill Clinton. He also went to, graduated from DePaul. And so I was like, man, it's like wherever I go, I'm like a stranger in a foreign land.
But my question is, how in the world do you get racism out of this?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, the number is 347-945-5229. I got South Carolina on the phone. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. We got a guest by the name of Ellis Washington. He's out of Detroit, and he is a conservative blogger on WND, WorldNet Daily. But I go, whoa, how are you do we realize that we've got all these cover-ups? The IRS?
He
Associated Press?
Yeah, he equated that with racism, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
I'm going to play the clip in a few minutes so that you can really get the gist of what he's saying. But
yeah.
Do we really understand how do you get racism out of this?
Okay.
It's like almost like making stuff up as you go.
Well, Tracy, you're absolutely right. And what Julian Bond and what other writers, I think Walter Williams, one of my mentors, former chair of the Department of Economics at George Mason University, as well as my other mentor, Dr. Thomas Sowell, who's a fellow at the Hoover Institute and at Stanford University. These guys for years have used phraseology like poverty pimps and the black racist establishment. Rush Limbaugh calls them the Black Caucasian Caucus. These people make their living on keeping race and everything, and it's always Republicans are the racists and blacks are the victims, and the Democrat Party is the savior of black people, and it's just the opposite of that. Just look at the history of the Democrat Party. I mean, the Ku Klux Klan was founded on Christmas Eve, 1865, okay, right after the end of the Civil War, and the Democrat Party has used the KKK and their racist tactics to belittle, to silence, to cower, to make intimidated people who were conservatives, who were on the Republican side, for over 100 years. And they're still using those same tactics.
So why? I mean, because I watched MSNBC this morning. I watched Morning Joe.
Yeah.
And I watched, who's the guy who had the tinkle down his leg when he heard Obama's
speech? Oh, Chris Matthews.
I heard Chris Matthews really have a hard time.
Yeah.
With Obama right now. He really, it was almost like the tinkle left.
That's a good one.
So now that the tinkle's gone,
yes.
I don't watch, what's Sharpton's show called?
Oh, no, I cannot watch that.
I don't watch that because it makes my,
keeping it,
whatever he calls it, it makes my blood boil.
Yes.
I'm going to run home tonight. Because I want to see how you going to spend this one, my brother. Because I have issues. You know, I have a problem with people lying to people,
right,
and saying they're doing it in the name of I care.
Right.
And
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, and I'm looking at this what's going on with all of the cover-ups. Because remember, and I said this before my show went down. President Obama walked in talking about transparency.
Yeah.
He had a press conference talking about for 3 days we're going to leave the bills up.
Going to have all the hearings on C-SPAN. Yeah.
And they won't let C-SPAN in. We're going to do this, and this is what's going to happen here, and this is how I want to make, because I want to make sure that everything's transparent. But he can't call AP and say there's a national security with some of the information that you have, don't release it, so we're going to send a secret subpoena for all your phone records and not tell you?
In violation of the law.
My transparent friend?
Yeah. Everything he says, if you want to understand Obama and keep from going into the insane asylum, just take what he says and interpret it as the opposite. Because when he says he's transparent, that's just the rules to show you that he's going to be the most opaque president and the most secretive president in history. And now the bloom is off the rolls. You notice, Tracy, all of these things, you know, like with Benghazi, with the consulate death, Ambassador Stevens and three others, brave Americans, just butchered and sodomized by those savages over there, and then the Department of Justice, illegal phone monitoring of over 100 Associated Press journalists, and then the IRS targeting groups based on political ideology, blacklisting Tea Party, conservatives, Jewish groups. All of these things did not really strike a chord with the media until that second thing I had mentioned about the AP journalists. Now the good white folks in the D.C. Press establishment, now it's come, the chickens have come home to roost to them. Now their knight in shiny armor, Barack Hussein Obama, has dared to stab them in the back. It was fine when he was stabbing Jews in the back, Republicans, conservatives. He's been doing that to us for many years. That was fine. They looked the other way. They laughed. They called us, we were crazy. We were being paranoid and things like that. But now that the chickens have come home to roost and it's attacking them, now the bloom is off the roll and they're scared and they're disappointed. That's why Chris Matthews Tinkle has went back up his leg.
Hey, the number is 347-945-5229. I got a question for you.
Yes.
Why did I asked this question earlier of the week, and so I've got to ask you because maybe you have a little bit more insight because because I'm not that smart.
Oh no, that's not true. You're very smart.
No, I'm not that smart. I want to know if I know that I have a good relationship with the press.
Yes.
I haven't really met you in face to face, but talking to you on the phone. I've got somewhat of a rapport with you right now. So
yes.
If I needed something in Detroit and it was gonna, cause national security, I'd call you on the phone and say, "Hey Ellis, how you doing? Listen,
yes.
I know that you got some information and it's really, really sensitive and we can't let that out."
Yes.
Can we ask you to squash it?
Yes. Yeah, I see where you're going.
I don't understand the cloak at night.
Right.
The subpoenas and cloaks and the secrecy.
But Tracy, here's a catch to that. If they were just going after that, that would be one thing. Why subpoena and seize across the board all their lines, all their information?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What?
I mean, that's a very excellent question. And you guys are both getting right to the gist of what's going on with Obama. This guy from Hawaii, from the time he was born with his white mother and, well, we think an African father, but now there's a friend of mine named Joel Gilbert's come out with a film, you guys got to get it if you haven't seen it, about Obama's real father, who was Frank Marshall Davis. The communists, okay? It'll blow your mind, but without getting off track on that.
We'll go back to that.
Yeah, all of Obama's life, from prep school in Hawaii to Occidental College, getting in on a scholarship and having a C average, then transferring to Columbia University, an Ivy League school in New York, with a C average and getting in on a full scholarship, and then going to Harvard and getting in there with a full ride scholarship, and then getting on the law review without having any kind of publication distinction. On and on and on. This man has been carried by people that powerful figures that we don't know about. And so what happens is, Tracy, you've been with guys. You've been with guys that might have been just a regular Joe Blow guy, and then you might have been with a guy with the curly hair. He's light-skinned. He just walks like he just floats on the air. And, he's the kind of brother that if you got into a fight, you couldn't call on him because he ain't going to really get down with you and protect you. See what I'm saying? So that's the kind of brother Obama is. He's used to being catered to. He's used to getting his way. And so when he was able to get the news phone numbers and listen to their conversations of the AP journalists, even though they have been on his side from day one, bending over backwards, basically being his de facto news service, he didn't hesitate because he's entitled. He believes that he can do anything he wants.
I'm with that. But see, do we not understand subpoena, cloaking, not calling? What in the world could be that intense that you had to cloak it at night and serve it in the daytime, try to not let it get out? What in the world could you be searching for that your attorney general, he recused himself?
Right. Well, we don't find out, Tracy.
Just as in Watergate, when the special counsel wanted to get the tapes from Nixon, and he bucked back. This is kind of the same thing. But I will bet you a dollar to a donut that they're going to say that they have the authority because it was national security, under the Patriot Act, they have the authority, and they will kind of brush it off to, okay, this is George Bush's fault. Once again, if he hadn't pushed for the Patriot Act, we wouldn't have been able to do this. That's just my theory.
You probably got a good theory. I hope you're wrong, because that would really be a degradation of the Constitution and of the rule of law.
But do we understand? I mean, and the numbers, again, the number 347-945-5229. Look at Benghazi. I mean, they said that there was a serious leak in the White House. And it was so serious that they had to subpoena the AP. Do we not understand how serious that is?
Right.
And then I'm reading an article right now in reference to, it says that let me make sure I get this right. Obama's campaign co-chair attacked Romney with leaked IRS documents. Don't we have a – when I send my – is that public record?
No.
Yeah, you know, I'm working on a piece right now where a George Soros and Sandler political progressive group called ProPublica has leaked a lot of information, I think including the one that you just spoke about, Romney's former campaign supporter, and it's illegal. I mean, it's unconstitutional, Tracy, and I would even go a step further. This is fascism. This is going back to Stalin and his gulags in the old Soviet Union, or Hitler and the Gestapo. These are Gestapo Nazi tactics, and Obama's got to be called out on this, and I hope that Democrats and Republicans can join together to fight this. This isn't a partisan issue. This isn't an issue that conservatives are using to, quote-unquote, get Obama. This is about the rule of law. And just like 40 years ago, do you know that he's done this 40 years to the week of when Nixon did his Watergate scandal? And so what goes around comes around. Wrong is wrong. And whether you're a Democrat or Republican, we have to fight this thing. Otherwise, our democracy is finished, and we're all going to be under a fascist state.
But now I said this to Styx earlier, and the number is 347-945-5229. Styx brought up Watergate, and they were saying this is worse than Watergate. And I said, well, no, not really. The difference is we didn't have bloggers. We didn't have 24-hour news. We didn't have none of this. We got bits and pieces of what the media told us. Right now, I can take a photo of us now and send it to you instantaneously, and there's nothing that Styx can do about it.
Yes.
So it's truly different now because we now know the details of it, whereas in the Nixon case, you just heard, you know, if today had been then, he might not have been pardoned.
Right.
And walked away.
No, you're right. Mm-hmm.
But what about the connection to those Democrat senators that also asked the IRS to investigate?
And that's what I'm saying. I think it goes broader than just Obama. I think it's more than just
him. The thing about the IRS, though, is it's a function of the Treasury, which is an executive branch function.
It's all executive branch.
You
got Geithner?
Yeah, that's executive branch.
Right, he was there. That was a part of the cabinet, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
President Obama said he didn't know anything about it.
Tracy, what I think the saving grace of this whole thing is the timing of it. Okay? We are a year and a half away from another election cycle. Okay? And everybody's going to be up for election this time. And Democrats are in a different situation now. You've had 4 years of Obama. Now you got another 4 years of Obama. This is going to be real interesting. It's going to be really interesting because I don't think he's going to win a lot of this one. And anybody that's riding on the gravy train, on the Obama gravy train, especially after January 1st, 2014, I think it's going to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, I hope you're right. You know, in 2010, with the rise of the Tea Party, the left didn't see that coming, and it smacked them upside the head, and they were very embittered by the Tea Party. And so you notice when Obama started doing his phone taps and using the IRS as his attack machine to go after the Tea Party and hassle them and not allow them to get the 501c4 status, that happened around March 2010. So that's when it kind of coincides with the rise of the Tea Party. And then after the election in November, when there was just one of the biggest sweeps in history, I think one commentator counted over 600 or 700 seats across America that switched from Democrat to Republican, largely based on the rise of the Tea Party. So the left knew that they had to put the Tea Party in their sights, and so they've been relentless going after them. And I hope this will lead in 2014 to a renewed rise of the Tea Party, because they're not racist. These are good Americans. These people have invited me to speak at their groups. I've shaken hands with them. Even my son, 16 years old, gave his first speech on Dr. King at a Tea Party event this past March. And you can go to my website, EllisWashingtonReport.com, and I have a link of my son speaking about Dr. King coming to his all-white school in Grosse Pointe 45 years ago to give a speech. Now, that same school wouldn't allow my son to speak on the 45th anniversary of Dr. King coming there to speak at that same school. Isn't that amazing? But that's the crazy society we live in that the gentleman that just spoke before me alluded to. But we have to be strong and stick together and not retreat.
And listen, I got to take a break. I'll be right back. I'm going to keep the phone lines open there in the chat room, South Carolina, so you can go ahead and talk with Ellis, and I'm going to pay some bills. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. We'll be right back. Why should you?
Yeah, Ellis, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. But,
is this Lloyd?
No. This is South Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Lloyd is in the studio.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Okay,
yeah.
Were you the gentleman talking earlier?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I live down here in South Carolina.
Okay.
And, I'm in one of those situations where, I only know another gentleman that's a conservative.
Yeah.
Shares the same conservative ideology. Of course, there's Armstrong, but he spent more time in Washington than he does in South Carolina now.
Okay.
But I've got family and wound up going on a Dr. Phil actually, several years ago because of my views, and I was being pretty much beat up because I was a conservative.
Yeah.
And because I had the values that I did, they were claiming that I was acting white.
Oh, that's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I try to break it down, man, and try to rationalize it. It doesn't make any sense to me. for the Democrat, I tell people, if you want to see what socialism looks like in America, all you have to do is look at what's happened to the black community, you know, systematically since 1964.
Yeah.
And you will see exactly what socialism looks like.
Right.
You
just
know?
Pick any big city, Detroit, you know, Houston, Cleveland, on and on and on. The Watts, Harlem. Just pick any city and you will see what socialism looks like.
Hmm. But, you know, and you try to say that, and the really saddening thing is when this whole election was came around,
mm-hmm.
The churches, the number of churches that went out completely for Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I do know. I mean, you know, them. I got folks that might say, you act white.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I do know. I know how some black people can act once they get into a position of power.
Yeah.
Okay? And Barack Obama is doing exactly what I thought he was going to do.
Yeah.
You know, I am the chief. You elected me. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And if you question my authority, I will squash you.
Right. No, exactly right. Just like you would expect a dictator to do. He's not interested in trying to convince people through the rigor of his ideas. He's used to just trouncing them and destroying them and using demagoguery or the IRS or whatever powers are at his disposal to crush his enemies. You're absolutely right.
And what I don't understand is at what point does a love affair end? Because I think that, you know, the days of playing the race card have come to an end, because I'm 48 years old. You're 51. But in 1970, when I started the first grade, okay, the little kid that sat beside me was a white kid, okay?
Because
they didn't integrate the schools in Darlington, you know, until 1970. So my class was pretty much the first class to go through that had, you know, a fully integrated school.
Yes.
So we don't know anything about that, man. We don't know anything about that.
Yes.
You know, and then I went to Marine Corps, and that was all over with. I didn't care what color you are, as long as you could shoot as good or better than me,
yep.
You know, in a foxhole.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You got my back when we out there on the battlefield, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the only racism that's alive and well today is primarily, you know, has to do with green, not with black and white.
You're right, sir.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that you will keep in touch with me, man. Like I said, my website is elliswashingtonreport.com, and I have an email there. And I would love to keep in touch with you, sir. And I got a radio show, and maybe sometime we can have you on the air. I'd love to have you as a guest on my radio show to hear your story. To talk, you know, for you to talk about, you know, what's it like to be a conservative, a black conservative in 2013 in South Carolina. I'd love to hear your story.
Yeah. it's amazing to me. I mean, and what's happened is because I was the way that I was, it's rubbed off on my daughters. And they'll quickly tell, you know, tell somebody, no, that's not right. That's not right.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to achieve something, you got to go out there and do it yourself.
Right.
You can't depend on the system. And they'll say, you're not going to get rich working for somebody else.
That's right.
You know, you might move up a class, but you're not going to get rich working for somebody else.
No, you're not.
And, you know, yeah. So, but man, I remember being in Detroit, man. I went to school over at Control Data, right up there beside Northland Mall, right across
Northland Mall. Oh, yeah,
yeah, Southfield. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I worked at that time, it was called a Sheraton up there in Southfield. But before that, it was the Hilton. But I worked at that hotel, man, in security while I was going to school. We used to, back in the day, we used to go to a place called Chuck's B&S Club.
Okay.
I don't even know if that place is still there. But what I would love, man, is to go back to Mr. Fofo's. I don't even know if he's still open. Is he still open?
I don't think so, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, that's the corned beef place.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Wow, and get me, man, I would love
right now to have me a loose meat sandwich. Never had it until I got to Detroit, man.
Oh,
but, man. That was the best. Oh, man.
It was really good, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's one thing about Detroit. They have little restaurants here and there. They may not look like much on the outside, but they really have some great food.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, they have some. I haven't had any real Polish sausage since I left Detroit.
Right.
I mean, you get to go down there and ham famic.
Oh, man, yeah, Pole Town, man.
Oh, man, they had a little butcher shop in there, and I say butcher
Reportage.
Shop.
Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going.
Coming back on.
Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll-free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
2004 probe of the NAACP. Now, at that time, that investigation came less than a month before the presidential election. The IRS looking into the NAACP's tax status, claiming a speech by the group's leader at the time, in which he criticized then-President George W. Bush over the Iraq War, might have crossed the nonpartisan line. Now, 2 years later, the IRS cleared the organization of those allegations. Julian Bond is the chairman emeritus of the NAACP and was the chairman of the organization during that audit. Mr. Bond, it's good to have you here, and I just want to remind our viewers, play the comments that the IRS saw as politically charged. It was part of your keynote address at the time at the NAACP's convention in July of 2004. Take a look.
The war's defenders have tried to stifle political debate. If you oppose the war, they say, you don't support our troops. That's nonsense. If it was up to us, every man and woman stationed in Iraq would be safely at home with their loved ones right now.
So, sir, past his prologue, auditors notified the NAACP that it would be subject to a 10% tax for political expenditures as well as additional penalties. Looking back, do you maintain that the NAACP was unfairly targeted given the rocky relationship at the time with President Bush? And are there parallels to what we're seeing today?
I don't think there are any parallels to what we're seeing today. Of course, we were unfairly targeted. The letter the IRS sent to me, I was the chairman of the NAACP at the time, said I had criticized the President of the United States. And I've grown up thinking that was my right as an American citizen, and every American citizen had that right. I thought this was picking on the NAACP. It was close to the election. We're an effective get-out-the-vote apparatus. Most of the people we're going to turn out to vote are not by our design Democrats, but happen to be Democrats, and it was an attempt to weaken us just before the election.
Sir, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, though, they're coming down on what we're seeing today in the IRS, you know, apparently targeting these Tea Party groups, doing so at a time in 2010 during the midterm elections where we saw an uprise in the Tea Party sweeping into Congress. Shouldn't there not be the same level of outrage, certainly from the White House? I mean, at the time, in 2004, Congressman Charlie Rangel called the audit a, quote, police state tactic. So do you think that there might be a double standard being looked at here?
No, I don't think there's a double standard at all. I think it's entirely legitimate to look at the Tea Party. I mean, here are a group of people who are admittedly racist, who are overtly political, who tried as best they can to harm President Obama in every way they can. I don't think there are correct parallels between these two incidents. It was wrong for the IRS to behave in this heavy-handed manner. They didn't explain well before or now what they're doing and why they're doing it, but there are no parallels between these two.
Chairman Baum, what do you think that the fallout will be for the Obama administration, especially during a time where the Tea Party had maybe lost a little air? Do you think that this is going to help inflate that, especially as we ramp up to the midterms for 2014?
I hope not. I hope they don't get any more air. You know, they are the Taliban wing of American politics, and we all ought to be a little worried about them.
Sir, do you think that's a little harsh, calling them the Taliban wing of American politics?
Not at all. Not at all. The truth may hurt, but it's the truth.
Julian Bond, Chairman Emeritus of the NAACP. Sir, thanks for your time on this.
Hey, you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600, and that's a clip that I found online. And I want you to, have some conversation about that. And I've got a guy on. His name is Ellis Washington. He's out of Detroit. He does a blog. and he writes for WND. And Ellis, give us your website.
Oh yes, EllisWashingtonReport.com.
And I'm gonna let Stix weigh in because Stix, you know, you are one of them patriot people, and they said that they are admitted racist. I've never heard the Tea Party admit to that. But maybe my ears, because you know I don't use Q-tips every day, so maybe I missed something, Stix.
Well, I don't know. You spoke at one. I mean, did you see a whole bunch of people throwing eggs at you?
I spoke at quite a few, and you know, and let me say this about the Tea Party. You know, the Tea Party makes everybody mad.
That's good. That's what you're supposed to do.
I mean, they really do.
I know.
They make everybody. I mean, it's not about the color.
Don't like us either.
No. We don't like many of y'all, because y'all don't go along to get along.
So Tracy, yes. if we're the Tea Party, because I am a Tea Partier, that means
yes, you are.
We're related to we're just like the Taliban. That means we don't want no religion. We don't want no Jews. We don't want nobody that's not like us. We're going to destroy everybody that's quote unquote a political infidel, right? Is that the case?
I think we got
some political infidels in our ranks, because at the last rally I was at in Florence, South Carolina, there were about 5-6 Democrats in the crowd too.
Well, let me say this, and then I'm going to let Ellis weigh in, and I know Stix wants to jump back in also. And Alabama, your mic is on. Let me say this, and let me really get this, really get everybody clear on this. The Tea Party, they don't electioneer.
No.
Electioneering, the NAACP and the Urban League, they electioneer. They only tell you what they want you to know, and if they don't want you to know it, they hide it, and they mobilize people based upon their paycheck.
Well, look at, for example, they made a big deal about people carrying firearms at Tea Party rallies, but they edited the tape when they showed it on television. The guys that were carrying rifles at that particular Tea Party event were all African Americans.
Well, that's something different.
If we're so racist, if the Tea Party don't want black people, if we're racist, I certainly don't want them walking around with firearms.
Them's whitewash black people. That's something.
Well, that's
different.
Why you didn't get elected too.
That's true too. That is true. Even though I won down in the Beloit. Hey Ellis, jump on in. I'm just saying.
Well,
they threw it into the mix.
Yes, that quote. I just jotted it down by Julian Bond. It's amazing. This is 2013, exactly 30 years ago. I was a senior at DePaul University. Julian Bond and myself, alma mater. And as the president of the Black Student Association, we were given some money to get a speaker every year. And we was trying to get Julian Bond. And back then, he was such a big name. I'm not sure if he was the chairman of the NAACP back then, but he was so difficult to get, we couldn't get him. So we finally settled on, I forgot the guy's name, with Ebony, the historian figure there. I forgot his name. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, now here we are 30 years later. You played a quote by Julian Bond calling the Tea Party the Taliban wing of the Republican Party. That is just rank demagoguery. It has no basis in fact. And you see how the words just easily rolled off his lip, just like as if you put a sheet on him and called him the Ku Klux Klan and he said the N-word. You know what I'm saying? It just rolls off because he knows that he's not going to get any kind of reprisals. He's not going to get any type of flack from the media. You heard the news media guy. I mean, he kind of questioned him a little bit, but he wasn't affronted. He wasn't angry. He wasn't disgusted by that rank demagoguery that Julian Bond did with no kind of basis. In fact, Julian Bond is, a trained attorney. He should know, for him to make a statement, I'm an attorney too, I'm a constitutional law professor. Before you make any statement, you have to be able to set your case. You have to be able to verify what you're saying. You just can't shoot off at the mouth as if you're some kind of drunk at a bar. Shame on Julian Bond for saying that demagoguery and being able to get away with it. But thank you for your radio show, Tracy, for giving us a voice to challenge Julian Bond, and maybe the audience will not take Julian Bond's words at face value in the future.
you know, it's not even so much. It would be okay if it was Julian Bond only.
Yes.
And there is media still that gives him the platform, because even inside of the issues going on in D.C., they're still trying to cover up the real root of it.
Yes, they are.
They do not want people to think.
Yes.
They do not want people to stand on their own 2 feet, and they do not want people to come off the system and not have the entitlement mentality. And if you saw that, I would not have had Julian Bond on my program and not have him and not challenge him on what he said.
Yes.
Because that was not a challenge. What they did was they still got to keep people locked into a certain paradigm, because they do not want them outside of their cage, because if they come outside their cage, they might find out freedom is kind of cool.
Yes.
And that bothers me. Alabama, your mic is on, darling. It's been
on.
Yeah,
I was listening to everybody talk, and I agree with what you guys are saying. Also, I was on Facebook yesterday, and some of these same people that were just celebrating for about 2 weeks that Obama won the election are now getting bitter and saying, you know, F Obama this, F Obama that. He's not doing anything for the black community. He's ignored us. He's looking out for gays and calling people on the phone because they, quote unquote, come out or whatever. And, you know, and I have to admit, maybe I need a little prayer, but I'm a little gleeful about it, because my thing is, okay, you made your bed, lie in it. You went out and you supported a guy who covers up the cross when he gives commencement speeches, doesn't even want to enter the room like he's a vampire or something. Then you got, you know, this guy who, you know, who basically sold him to stop whining at the NAACP speech. And I don't feel sorry for uninformed people. You cannot afford to be uninformed, or you're going to be herded like cattle, and they're going to keep being herded. There's a guy by the name of Dr. Sebi, born in Honduras, who heals people. And he makes claims that he can heal AIDS and cancer and diabetes, all types of different stuff. And he made a case in front of a bunch of people from African countries, NAACP, Jesse Jackson. He said he ignored him. Nobody came and showed him any type of support. Even with the abortion thing, people, you know, the NAACP knows that black people are being killed and targeted for murder in these a lot of abortion clinics, even after they survived the abortion. But nobody cares. And so these people are complicit in keeping us down, and then they're quick to point the finger at the man figure, which I believe in the Illuminati, but at the same time, you know, they're complicit, they're puppets. And so I don't feel sorry for people that don't want to, when you try to talk to them and try to show them, they don't want to wake up, and they'll argue you down and reach and make some stretching, like, you know, the Tea Party's racist, without really, have you done research? Have you been to an event? No.
No.
I mean, I almost got in a fight at a sauna one time because a guy was making points about the Tea Party, and I didn't even know it. I was just sitting there, and I just said, well, you know, so I started making facts. He just got emotional. He just couldn't handle it. He just got upset. You know, I ain't no punk, man. I'm like, what you want to do? But it got to that point, and I'm sitting there to myself, dude, you know, you're making these points. You don't have any facts. You're getting your marching orders from Al Sharpton's show on MSNBC. So I don't feel sorry for you. I really don't.
Hey, I mean, I mean, we have open conversation, and the number is 347-945-5229. We're talking about this, what's going on in D.C. I'm watching them try to spin this to keep people harnessed, because the last thing they want to do is to let the people out the cage. They've got to keep them within a confine. Even so now, even though they're exposed and they're mad at the Obama that they had. I'm serious.
I wrote probably a few years ago now, and people got mad at me. A couple of years ago, I was a professor of political science at a historical black college university called Savannah State. And during that year, we gave a symposium. This was the year that Obama was running for office the first time, okay? It was like 2008, 2009. And we did a symposium where I played John McCain, the Republican, and a colleague of mine played Obama. And during our mock debate, it was a packed house, probably had about 200 students, and they loved it. I let my opponent, Brandon Ray, the typical Democratic talking points about Republicans are racist, bigoted, homophobic, on and on, the same old baseless propaganda. And then I went in and basically said, how long will Black America remain on a Democrat Party plantation? How long will you allow yourselves to be manipulated, your God-given talent in prison in the Democrat Party ideology? And then I slammed my fist on the Bible, Tracy, on the table, and a loud voice said, get off the damn plantation. You could hear a pin drop. Then after a few seconds, there was some nervous laughter.
That's
and then
why,
after that, it was thunderous
they,
applause.
That's why they kicked you out of Detroit.
Tracy, thank you for telling me. I didn't know until this moment.
You didn't mess up, dude. Now listen.
Yes, I did.
I mean,
I got off the plantation, so I'm enemy number one.
And I'm an immigrant coming in there on Sundays, but you know I stay low key. They know
I know. You don't slam your fist on the table.
No. See, yeah, that's why they keep. Listen. You in the deep. They blaming your governor for because they broke.
They're about to go into bankruptcy.
They're about to go down the Hudson. But no, they don't want to.
Yeah, the Detroit River, yes.
they don't understand. All that water, where the bridge is, they're going over to Canada, they're about to fall in it.
Right.
See, don't, that's why they kick. That's why you out there in Moose Point.
Yeah, Gross Point.
Listen, I call you Moose Point because I've been to Moose Point, and you can't go past the 25. Only place in Michigan you can only go 25 miles an hour. That's where the people, the elite meet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Uh-huh.
But then also, I think if you just tell someone they're on a plantation, they think it's funny. I think you can kind of really make a very strong case that it is a plantation because you're there for the resources and you are the Negro that's in the house. You're not the field one. Because you're the one that wants to stay there because if you leave, you'll have to actually keep what you earn and work for what you get. And you don't want to do that. You'd rather stay. I can't vote for them because, I mean, if they cut this and do that, I'm like, okay, so when the country collapses, don't blame it. Blame it on yourself because you voted to keep spending. I'm not saying vote Republican. I kind of feel like until somebody comes along and really wants to do what's right, which is, Ron Paul, even though I don't agree with gay marriage,
mm-hmm.
Ron Paul is one of those guys you have to kind of give that to. So I just don't see how a lot of the Republicans are saying, hey, let's cut spending. Let's cut the increase by 2%. And they think they're cutting spending. That's stupid.
But now,
and then they're doing sequestration. You're going to shut stuff down when you still got more money than you had last year, which is stupid. That's how the government does accounting.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not.
It's fuzzy math.
Yeah, they're going to lay off. They're going to furlough Pentagon workers. And the money's there. Got to be there to pay them because it was there last year.
They just don't get a raise.
Right.
But, you know, we have to – and when I look at what's going on, remember I had Carl Bryant on, and he did the movie Runaway Slave.
Yeah.
And I had him on during the election. And if you really look at the history, the people who ran away from the plantation, they were sought after just as hard by their own as the one – as the person who owned the plantation himself.
Well – you know,
because the slave doesn't want you to be free.
Unfortunately, slavery is the natural state of mankind. And I didn't know this until recently. Only 20% of the Israelites left Egypt. All the Israelites didn't leave Egypt.
Well, I never heard that.
I never heard that. Where did you find that at?
Rabbi Lampen.
That don't mean he was there. No, that ain't.
He says the original. He says the original Hebrew.
I don't care.
The original Hebrew says
there. That's another subject. We'll come back to that.
Okay.
I ain't never heard that before. Yeah. That only 20% on it. No, I know that Harriet Tubman said that she could have freed more slaves. She could have convinced them that they were slaves.
Right.
That's right.
I need. But we have to understand. You can't parallel those two.
Right. Well.
Yeah,
okay. But people have a problem with people becoming free. People have a problem with you coming to
work
and working.
Well, people have a problem with people being successful.
Yeah, but
when my wife and I started out on our little venture, we had family members that told us we were going to go bankrupt.
But see, when I say this, and let me say this, we're looking, if you go back into the mindset of slavery in the United States of America, the problem with people and the slaves is that they were comfortable in the boiling water. And they really did not want anyone to come out the pot because they liked the water at the temperature that it was because they had become conditioned to it.
Yeah.
Now we are pitted against one another by race. Mm-hmm. When we've talked about this before, it is not about race.
No.
It's truly about socioeconomic status.
Right.
But we're all conditioned to be in the pot that we're in, and they have kept us there. So when I look at MSNBC and how they handled Julian Bond with this issue, we're talking about the President of the United States of America. He is an institution.
Right.
We do not understand the power that he holds in that seat. And instead of him using the power in that seat for the good of people, and yes, politics will always be there. But when you look at people dying in Benghazi, when you look at he said he was going to change Washington and bring people together, and we're more polarized now than ever before. When you look at the Navy SEALs that were killed
in the helicopter.
When you look at the IRS probing after people because of their belief system.
Right.
We've seen this happen in gubernatorial races. This is not new.
When you look at sending guns across the border.
We've been doing that for years. I mean, when we look at Ollie North and the Iran-Contra hearings, when we look at all of this that America has done, when we look at what he says he knows and what he doesn't know, and then on top of that, to actually subpoena the records for the Associated Press under the cloak of
national
security, and people are still not waking up because they don't want you awake. Do we really understand how they're trying to keep you in the paradigm that you're in and not let you loose? Because the last thing they want is America to be an educated electorate.
Tracy, don't you feel like, I mean, if you got a slave on a plantation, you don't want to have to whoop him to within an inch of his life. You just want to keep him pacified, and the best way to keep him pacified is by giving him a few scraps, not enough to where he out there selling his own and coming up, but just enough to make ends meet.
They've been doing it all along. And we need
to
understand
that.
That's
what they're doing with welfare and all these different programs.
Are you well fed?
No.
You got to understand, are you well fed? We think you're well fed because you don't know anything but the feed that you eat.
Hello?
Hold on. Go ahead. Go ahead, Philadelphia. Please, Philadelphia, you are coming up. I'm going to pull you up. Do not filibuster. Hear me what I'm saying. I get too many complaints inside of my terrestrial audience. I will shut you off. So you can go ahead and make your comment, but do not filibuster across everyone.
Well, in large cities, the reason why the Democratic Party is dominant is because the Democratic Party promises that people will have employment in the public sector, because the private sector does not hire a lot of people who are minorities, namely African-American and Hispanic.
What?
So that's true. In the private sector in major cities, they don't hire large numbers of people who are the minorities, who are in the low range in terms of the income scale. The public sector hires a lot of people, so the larger the government is, the better.
Well, let me ask you this. Philly. Phil, I'm asking you a question. Do you feel like a lot of people don't, if you come from a poorly educated system and you don't go to college, you're not capable of competing? It's not racism. It's just that, well, it could be if you want to get into why that system's messed up. That's another story. But I'm just saying, if you do come from a poor education system and you come in and you're trying to compete with someone that's not, doesn't it stand to reason that has a lot to do with it instead of just, you see what I'm saying? So I'm just trying to understand what you're saying, because that point could be there are many dynamics involved in as to why someone won't get a position. Because I'm in Atlanta, so I see, that's all I see is African-Americans in the private sector. So maybe I'm not living in reality, because Atlanta's maybe just a little different. But in other cities.
Yeah, well, if you're talking about Atlanta, Atlanta is different because of the fact that you're in
okay,
the
well, so is Charlotte,
and that's
so
where
is,
you
so
have,
is Nashville.
Well,
so
Alabama,
is,
Alabama, let him get it. You can't ask him a question. You can't ask him a question and it not and he not finished. So go ahead, Alabama, finish. But don't cross each other.
No, I was just trying to say Charlotte, Nashville. It's a bunch of cities. I was just trying to be funny about Atlanta.
I know, but you know he can't handle. He don't go across him. I need for him to finish his thought because
okay.
I want him to get his thought out. But I can't have us talking on top of each other. Go ahead, Alabama, finish your comment.
No, I was just saying. My thing is this. Like I came
Alabama.
From a school. You said Alabama.
I meant Philadelphia, but you know it's another part
go
of
the
country.
I didn't know that. I didn't know it until you just said that.
I know.
Go ahead,
Philadelphia.
What I'm saying to you is once you get beyond the Mason-Dixon line, which is at the bottom of Pennsylvania, if you're talking about D.C., Atlanta, and different cities down south, African-Americans do much better in the private sector in the south. That's why when African-Americans do go to college, if they go to one of the black colleges, they'll usually find a job down south somewhere, but not that many stay in the Northeast. In the Northeast, they tend to hire people who are Asian more so than people who are African American. So the reason why the cities in the Northeast stay with the Democratic Party because the African Americans that live there, they can ensure that they'll be able to get some type of employment if the government is large and if they have the unions in place. So,
but that,
well, then,
that,
but Philly, don't
Alabama.
You think that?
Yeah,
no, I was just saying that, don't you think that, and this is my thing, a guy, what's his name, Joseph C. Phillips, the guy from The Cosby Show, made a statement one time. He was saying, your education, I don't care where you come from in America, your education, I don't care if you maximize what you get, even in a poor system, you will succeed. You will. Now, will you be at Harvard or Yale? Probably not. If you make a 22 on ACT, you still can get a scholarship. You can still go to school. You can still succeed. All you have to do is just work what's in front of you. If you don't do that, don't come out with a 1.2 GPA talking about, well, it's racism. Don't drop out of school, which a lot of them do in these major cities. 70% of them in some of these cities you're naming are dropping out, and then they're complaining about not getting a job. So then they get into a life of criminal activity, but it's because it's you have to only you can only work with the serenity prayer and say I can only change what I can change. Everything else I have to know the difference to not you know, to accept. I see stuff out there that's messed up. But you have to maximize what's in front of you. If you're not going to do that, then you're part of the problem. You really are.
Go ahead. Hold on, Philadelphia. Go ahead, Ellis. Jump in.
Oh, man. Well, this is just such a great conversation. I was just really enjoying it. I mean, I think the Philadelphia gentleman, he has some good points, and he actually his opinion is probably held by the majority of blacks who in 2008 voted for Obama at 96%, and in 2012 it dropped a little to 93%, but that's still the overwhelming majority. Unfortunately, there's some holes in his argument that the other gentleman from South Carolina very succinctly addressed, and so I won't repeat those. I would only say this. We have to get away from race, and this was what Tracy was saying earlier in our conversation. We got to get away from race because that is like shackles around our wrists and around our neck and our ankles because it just keeps us only seeing the world in black and white. Well, in the 21st century with the Internet and all of these technical innovations that are coming at an explosive rate, it's not about color. A lot of times, like I teach college right now, I've never seen any of my students. I teach hundreds of students. I have never seen them because I'm teaching online. So they can reach me. They can text me. They can Skype me. They can email me. You see what I'm saying? So it's a whole nother exponential level. I don't know how many blacks is in my class or how many Asians. I guess I can make a guess based on the names that come up on the computer screen, but that's really irrelevant. It's do you do the work, and if you're having trouble with it, do you have the wherewithal to come to me so I can help you, or will you just go along and get along until you flunk out and then holler racism at the end of the day? the world's not going to keep hearing racism rhetoric. We're going to hear the rhetoric of hard work and assiduousness and being a reliable person. That's going to be the rhetoric of the 21st century, not guise of racism. Yes.
And what's happening is people who are of the controlling class or who want to be a part, and I'm going to call them progressives because that's what they are. The progressives want to keep you in the race box, the race cage, the race plantation, so that you will continue running on the hamster wheel and use it as a crutch and not using it as a way to get out.
Yes.
And that's our problem. Our problem, and so even with President Barack Obama, you know, I applauded. I went to the inaugural and was like, wow, he really did it. As I worked in the McCain campaign, I have to say, the man really did. I mean, his team did dance. They had folks spinning on their wheels. They could not keep up with what was going on with the technology that they were using and how they were using it to get this man elected. They could not. It was masterful how he played the Electoral College in his favor.
Yes.
He understood it, and because he understood it, he overcame the obstacles of color and made it to the White House. I applaud the man for doing that, even though I did not celebrate his policies and or his agenda. But right now, you have found out that having him in the White House is not beneficial to the outhouse in any way, shape, or form. No one is benefiting by him being there. Not the people that put him there. And instead of us standing up on our own two feet and doing that which is necessary to get what we need to get from the White House, we see that the oversight, the management, and what has been happening there is not good for not only the president for some, but the president for all, since you want to claim him that way. Because national security and people getting killed over in Benghazi and covering it up is not a good thing. Navy SEALs getting killed is not a good thing. The IRS actually limiting you getting your status is not a good thing, especially when your own nonprofit went through in less than 30 days. And then seizing public records that happen to be because of the media, which is a violation of the Constitution, is not a good thing. And with all that said, we really need to wake up. Because we're not asking the questions. And I don't know about you, Ellis, but my Facebook page is awfully quiet now.
Really?
With the celebrations of President Barack Obama, instead of them asking the same questions that we're asking.
Right.
See, because when he was running for office, I was getting some emails from my people on the left. My friends, my liberal Democrat friends, I was getting some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And now they tell me, you know, you need to pray for the president. No, I'm praying for him, but we need to make him accountable, too.
Right.
Because he still got in the office with unemployment in the African-American community being past it was in the 60s.
Yes. Thomas Jefferson, I was just going to give you a quote. Thomas Jefferson had a very good quote that said, "Let me no longer hear confidence in man, but bind him down to the chains of the Constitution." And I love that quote because no matter how great we think a president is, whether it's Obama or Reagan or whoever you think your paradigm is for the greatest president, they should be shackled. And just picture that in mind. We've been talking about slavery. Picture the President Obama shackled hand to foot to the Constitution. That's a beautiful picture. And if we had that going on in Washington, D.C., Tracy, we would have a lot less problems and a lot more happiness.
Because we're not getting anything. The American people right now, when you look at the Affordable Health Care Act, mm-hmm. I don't know if you really know. I mean, you've got doctors that are coming off of Medicaid and Medicare right now. Mm-hmm. I don't want any, because if they don't take federal dollars.
Right.
As long as they don't take any, and right. It's a cash business.
Right.
They're in business.
Yep.
Yes.
They don't have to align, which means your best doctors will come off the system and your rich people will get their medical care. You just won't. Your private hospitals will now soar.
That's mm-hmm. right.
Where are you? And now you don't even want to go to the clinic.
You're going to end up with the same system they have in England, where you know the wealthy get excellent care, and the common people are drinking water out of the plants.
That's right. That's right.
And my problem is, I want us to wake up to watch how this is being spun. Because even in the questioning of the president right now, they're still trying to harness and keep you at bay, because they don't want you to rise to think. They still don't want the American people to awake.
No, they're scared to death of them.
Because if they ever wake up a sleeping giant, there will be a revolution.
Well, I just wanted to say you shouldn't be surprised by the tactics that Obama is using now with the IRS, because they really didn't try to investigate him at the time that he was elected. So you don't know who this man really is in terms of the tactics he will use to
they
keep
know.
Power.
They know who he is. It
no.
was his friend.
Right. But what I'm talking about is the general public that voted for him. They didn't know who he was. So when they hear these things about things that the people who are under him have done, they shouldn't be surprised by this.
No. They don't want. You got to realize he was the picture. We got to really come to grips with this. And this goes back to Ellis's his article about celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama is the celebrity president. See, John Kennedy, had he had the media that we have today, he might have made it. But President Obama and Michelle Obama, they truly have done the Jimmy Kimmel late night view talk show circuit. They have become the celebrity picture on the stand president.
Mm-hmm.
Have they not?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. They can do no wrong because they have this era about them where if you say anything about them, then you'll be accused of racism. And so they're invincible. They can go and come and do whatever they want, use the IRS, take their friends on a $500,000 trip to Europe on a taxpayer's dime. And if you say anything about it, then you're just a racist, or you're just a Republican, or you just hate Obama, and you're just dismissed. It's really a tragedy.
And I don't think we understand. I mean, even in the condition that the country is in, and I can understand being in the White House, but the entertainment and the money that is being spent by this administration is astronomical.
Yes.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, you know, they spent this type of money so that they could buy the vote in a certain sense.
They're partying.
Yeah.
They party.
They're spending a lot of money on recreation.
They're kicking it. I mean, you got to understand, they're kicking it. This is not buying stuff. They just haven't. I mean, you know, I hate to put it this way, so for all of my white listeners, you guys have to understand. It's like jumping on the bed, and you never had a chance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say,
well,
Ellis? I mean,
yes.
I mean,
he spent more money than pretty much all the other presidents before him put together. It's incredible. But I'm saying that goes back to my original point that I made earlier. He's entitled all his life. He's the mulatto, privileged kid, the son of a communist heavyweight intellectual, and he was raised to act like he walks on clouds. He could do no wrong. That's why you ever see his face whenever he's challenged, at the rare times he's challenged in a press conference, how he just frowns up. Or remember when he was speaking at the prayer breakfast a couple of months ago and Dr. Ben Carson got up to speak.
Let's get tight.
And in a very nice way, as a Detroiter, he read in the Riot Act about what the right way to do health care, using health, health services?
Health savings accounts.
HSA, I always forget that. Thank you. Health savings accounts. And just if you don't believe me, go back to YouTube and just type it in and look at Obama's face. He acts like he just ate a sandwich full of worms. He just – to see dictators don't a lot. They don't like it. Hitler, Mussolini, Mao, Stalin, Lenin, they don't like it when somebody speaks up against them and talks about the Constitution and that you have to be shackled to this. He wants to be able to dictate to us. We're just slaves to him. We're nothing. We're nobody to him. And so that's what we got. We got what we got. And so we, in a sense, we make this bed. And we elected Obama twice, and we got to live in, and it's really
no.
I didn't vote for him, man.
Now, do you think that he's going to get impeached?
Well, I know they're talking. I hope the Republicans have the guts to push it through, but I don't. So far, I don't have any confidence in them. They're just cowards to me.
Now, hold on. Wait a minute. Do you think that we have the? You said that you don't think they have the confidence to do it. What do you think will happen race-wise?
If they did it?
If they impeach this president.
Yeah.
Or they force him to resignation.
Yeah. It would probably be some dissension and maybe some riots. But I think if they do it the right way and they show irrefutable evidence, I think a lot of the blacks and Hispanics and others that are just hardcore Obama supporters will go along. I mean, we're already seeing some cracks in his alliances with the media, like he was talking about earlier, Chris Matthew and that tickle running back up his leg. You know, I thought Chris Matthew would go down with the ship. But no, he's beginning to do, like you said, Tracy, and think for a change. See, it's difficult to think. And just because you went to Harvard or Yale, I went to Harvard at the same time Obama was there. Those are some of the biggest dummies I've ever seen in my life. They're just good at memorizing a lot of information and doing good on standardized tests. They're not good at just common sense. You drop the average person from Harvard or Yale in the hood of Detroit, they wouldn't know what to do. Just freaking lost without their iPod and their texting. Yeah, text this 45 that's pointing in your head. They wouldn't know what to do, Tracy.
They couldn't handle a D. Yeah, they're just useful
idiots. And Obama's is like that too. He played the Chicago angle, and yeah, he bred Saul Alinsky and was doing community organizing in the 80s. It was just all a front to help give him street cred, quote unquote, so that the blacks would vote for him.
Because he was definitely learned, mm-hmm. learned inner city. He was not from inner city. That's why he chose.
That's the reason why he stayed in Jeremiah Wright's church for 20 years, because Jeremiah Wright had to teach him how to be a black man.
There you go.
Yeah, he had to learn that.
Even, look this up if you don't believe me, his marriage was arranged by Jeremiah Wright.
It was about love.
His wife was carefully picked.
For him to give him
that street cred he would need to fool the blacks in Chicago to think he was one of them when he's just a white man in a black skin. That's why his policies don't do anything for black America, because that was never his intent. His intent is to help the white feminists and the homosexuals and the radicals, the people that really got him into power. The blacks, who they gonna vote for? Republicans? He knew he had their vote in the bag. That's why he's not doing any policies to help black America. He has utter contempt for black America.
So let me, because they did not accept him when he first came out. We have to understand that we treated him, you know, being what they call an Oreo and or a mixed breed,
mm-hmm.
don't always make you favorite in the black community.
No, it doesn't.
But
it's not only the fact that he's a mixed breed, it's the fact that he came from a privileged background in which he was only around whites who were very wealthy in all of the places he went. The only time he came across poor African-Americans is when he went to the south side of Chicago. That was the first time in life he had any kind of interaction with those types of people. So he does not really understand the blacks in America.
No, I'm not talking about understanding. We're talking about acceptance. See, it's one thing when you show up and the number is 347-945-5229. It's one thing to show up and be of a different culture and of the same skin. being an African-American and walking into an inner city and you come from a suburban outlook, it ain't always easy. Because if you want to talk about bullying, we will show you a bully.
Right.
Talk like a white man, talk like a white girl, and go into the hood and try to strike up a conversation and see where it gets you.
It won't be pretty.
And see, I don't think white America understands the dynamics of nuances that happen in the African American community when you show up and you look different, or your hair is straight, or you're light-skinned, or you're dark-skinned, or you talk different, or you walk different, or your hair, it'll blow your mind how you will become discriminate towards them.
Because what happened in their communities, they were more under a form of segregation in these large cities where their neighborhoods were, like, almost under a form of Jim Crow as well. So you know, you didn't just have Jim Crow in the South. You also had it in these large cities, too. So that's the reason why they react that way when someone comes from the outside.
But Philadelphia, this is not about why we act this way. We're talking about what it is. And so you have to understand that you can be a little bitter about racism based on black and white, but you can also be extremely bitter based upon black and white, how they treated you when you tried to, you know, because you thought you were one of them. That's a whole other world, and that's a great conversation that we probably need to have, because I don't think we understand the dynamic that happens there. And so we think that you're in love with me, but you actually disdain me because of how I treated you. And Ellis, you coming from Detroit, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
You know,
you're singing
an outsider.
My song.
Am I singing your song?
You're singing my song. You're absolutely right.
If you want to talk about racism and being of the same color, they will cut your throat.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the inner city, they call it that for a reason. I mean, the old songs from, this is also, you know, Detroit is also called Motown, and some of the songs they used to sing about, what was it, the Temptations, they had a song, In the Ghetto, you know, and they were talking about how difficult it was. It was like being in a jungle. And I remember as a little kid, you know, growing up just before the riots jumped off. Oh, that was just a little bit after. I learned quickly that if I'm walking down the street and I see some young men shooting dice, don't walk by them because something might jump off. So I go around the block or walk on the other side of the street. If somebody's talking loud and very combative, don't get into it with them. Just try to defuse the situation, back away, and live to fight another day. That's survival in the ghetto, and that's what we got to learn.
And see, I don't think we understand that President Obama did not show up,
right,
and was not embraced by all. But no one has talked about that dynamic of his life, because everything has been sealed and hidden. Because
that's
Michelle
right.
Obama, even if you look at her research papers from college,
yes,
she was not warm loving, and you can tell that by how she looked at Boehner on the inaugural breakfast.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like when she wrote the research paper at Princeton, she wrote it in social science.
Yeah.
She talked and she basically she talked about the racism on campus. How as an African American female, she didn't feel that she was able to fit in on that Ivy League campus. That's what she talked about in her
thesis.
Right, right. That's what she talked
about
in her thesis paper that she wrote as an undergrad at Princeton.
That's right, and I'm writing a law review article right now where I just found an article of hers at Harvard Law School, her thesis there, where she was basically making a thesis that we need to have more black faculty. We need a race-based faculty. And I was like, wow, that sounds interesting. But now that I know Michelle 25 years removed from Harvard, this was in 1988 when she was graduated from Harvard Law School, the black faculty she wants is not black faculty like me or you, Tracy, or the gentleman from South Carolina or the gentleman from Philadelphia if we were black conservatives.
that's not the black faculty she wants. She wants black faculty that have been stamped on their forehead, NAACP, which incidentally stands for National Association for the Abortion of Colored People.
Hold on just a second. Oh, Alex, your mic is up. How you doing, honey?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
We're doing well.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about all this going on?
You know, I really just tuned in hearing you talk about Michelle Obama's old papers and things like that. So I don't really know what the topic you're talking about yet.
Well, we're just talking about, you know, so if anyone's just tuning in, so since Alex is just chiming in, we're talking with Ellis Washington out of Detroit, and he is a writer for WorldNet Daily, and he also has, and give me your website again, Ellis. Ellis?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. My line is kind of breaking
all right.
up a little bit. What did you say? I'm sorry.
No, I need your website again.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ellis, E-L-L-I-S. EllisWashingtonReport.com.
And we're talking about being a conservative, being an independent thinker, not even being a conservative, just being an independent thinker in the world today, and how we look at President Obama and, you know, they're still trying to hold people at bay because they don't want you to be too engaged to make you think. Because what we're talking about and what he has done is something that will engage you to think. It's not like Bill Clinton having a winky. This ain't a winky moment. What?
I'm not going to touch that, Tracy.
What? I'm serious. Okay. Bill Clinton had a winky moment. Winky moments don't take a lot of thought.
That's right.
High crimes of treason, cover-up,
right.
and distortion, it takes a lot of engaged thought.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. A whole lot more than a winky. And you're lying about your wife. Because, you know, most men, you put a camera in front of them and their wife don't know, most of them going to lie.
Right.
But there's more here with Benghazi, with IRS, and with AP than there is with winky moments.
Thank you.
This is a whole other level.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope the Republicans that have the strength and the fortitude. See, you know who I love, Tracy? I love Ted Cruz of Texas. That guy has a intestinal fortitude. He speaks well. He's fearless, and he will go to any venue, speak on any subject, and he does it in a forthright manner. He's not licking his finger, holding it up to the wind to see which way the wind is blowing that day to see, you know, how he's going to act. This guy, he's got a great future, and I hope he runs for president. We need more Republicans like him.
Now, it's really funny because my co-host, Jeff, is in the chat room, and he just said that on yesterday. He is a Cruz guy.
Really?
Yeah, he just said that. He just actually wrote in inside the chat room, I like this guy. He sounds like me.
Okay. Well, I think Cruz, the fact that he was born in Canada and his parents were, like, I'm not sure if his parents like happened to be citizens of America at the time that he was born, and he was born in a foreign country.
He's
born
Cuban.
In Canada.
What, is he born in Canada? Is he born in America? Or that's the question.
Well, no, his parents are naturalized citizens from Cuba.
But what about him?
Well, if he was born, if they were citizens at the time he was born, he's still a citizen, even if he was born in Canada.
No, is that true?
Yeah. Doesn't matter where in the world you're born, if you're born to two citizens of the United States.
But I'm born
to
one.
Because John McCain was born actually on a naval ship. His grandfather and his father were highly decorated career Navy admirals, and he was actually born on a Navy ship off of the coast, I believe, of Nicaragua.
Well, but so, he was in the Navy. That was something different.
He was
different.
In the Canal Zone.
I know,
he was in
but
the Panama
still, his parents were, you know, citizens, obviously American citizens, but he wasn't actually born in America.
Listen, I got to take a break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Tracy and Friends, but I got a question for you when I come back. So what's wrong with President Obama being born in Kenya? I'll be right back. It's number 347-945-5229. We'll see you on the other side of my break.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, like, basically, Obama is like the cult of personality, and a lot of African Americans just followed what the Democratic Party went with. And at first, they questioned, like, in terms of if he was really a black American based on his biography, but that went out the window once, you know, he, like, once they tried to set him up as the candidate of choice. So the African-American vote is going to follow the Democratic Party 9 times out of 10 because of the promise of employment and of the benefits that are coming from the government. And that's how that party is able to lock itself, you know. So that's my comment as to, you know, why Obama is still popular.
Okay. Yeah, well, you got a good point there, sir. I can't argue with that.
But I think some of these same tactics you're seeing him do is what happened, like under Clinton. Clinton had some tactics that the public didn't know about in terms of the way he went about his politics, and Obama is doing the same.
Yeah, you're right.
But the problem is Obama is more under a microscope because he has gone so far to the left. He has not tried to become a moderate or come to the center.
Right.
So I think he's going to have probably a higher level of criticism against him than what you found with Clinton.
Yes, I agree.
Now the economy is soaring now in terms of the Dow Jones, but I think the economy is going to take a drop after January 1st, 2014, when they start to make the small businesses pay the health care tax for the nationalized health care program they're trying to put forward. I think you're going to see the economy start to go backwards after that happens.
Yes. I agree. And that's unfortunate because a lot of people, a lot of businesses, they're going to just say, you know, forget this. It's not worth it. I'm going to close up shop. Right. Rather than trying to play this exorbitant Obamacare tax, which is going to put me out of business anyway, so I might as well just close my business right now. That's what they're going to do, man. They're already doing it by the thousands.
Right.
How long does this show last? Does anybody know?
I think this show lasts for like 3 hours. Sometimes I call in the afternoon. I don't call in every day, but sometimes they have some good topics on here.
Okay.
You know, they talk about. But I think that you know, the way African Americans have to look at the future, they have to not depend on politics. They have to try to do something in their own neighborhoods, like in terms of their ability to build different types of businesses and to rebuild the economy of their neighborhoods. And to put your faith in politicians, that's not going to save you as a group of people.
That's right. Very good point.
So, you know, to try to anoint Obama as a messiah, he's going to solve the problems. No, that's, you know, that's the wrong move for them to make as a group. They need to focus on the economic problems that they're having, because as we go more into a global type economy, the competition from people from foreign nations in America is going to be even greater, and the African Americans are going to have to compete with these people, and they're coming to America all the time. They're constantly coming into the country. People from India you have people from China and from other parts of the world, and they're coming to take the jobs that the Americans don't fill in large numbers, namely in engineering, in science, and in these other fields where you don't have a lot of Americans are getting like the PhD degree and so forth in these fields. You have these foreigners that are coming from these other, you know, types of countries and taking these jobs in this country at this point. And I don't think the manufacturing is going to come back to America to a large extent because of the types of labor forces that you have in those third world nations.
Yeah, they get paid, maybe $1 a day?
Right.
And then over here with the unions and health care, you got to pay the workers, and the Social Security, and days off, and vacation days, and pregnancy days. They don't have none of that in Bangladesh.
No.
They don't have none of that in China, in those sweatshops. So that's why you can make those nice clothes from, Pierre Cardin or Donna Karen or pick your designer. You can get it, you know, for a reasonable price because it's made over there. If they made it over here, man, that stuff would be triple the cost.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But then with the immigration, they're going to give amnesty to 11 million Mexicans, and more Mexicans are going to cross the border. If they are able to stay in the country, they will be able to apply for the government jobs that a lot of the African Americans have now. So that's going to be further competition that African Americans will have to deal with.
You see where this is going, sir?
Right.
It's going to be a riot. That's what we're talking about. It's going to be some serious race riots.
Right, race riots. Yeah.
It's going to be horrible, man. And it's
This
is right out of the Saul Alinsky playbook that Obama studied in Chicago 25 years ago as a community organizer, because he said rule number 12 or rule number 13. Unless you said pick
a talk show that stimulates your mind and keeps you thinking about things going on in your world. From local issues to topics of global importance, Tracy and Friends keeps you informed and keeps the conversation going. Call to talk to Tracy and Friends at 347-945-5229, 330-781-9600, or toll free at 1-866-530-WSOM. Listen online at TracyandFriends.com or at 600WSOM.com. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
Hey, I'm back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I have no idea what you guys were talking about while I was at break.
We were having a good time.
Girl wants to know where in the heck I am. Here I am. I haven't gone too far. And I want to hear from all of you that are in the studio and in the audience here locally as well as abroad. Again, that number is 347-945-5229. It is 8 minutes after the hour of 2 o'clock. And I have Sticks in studio, and I have a guest with me, and I'm looking forward to meeting you, Ellis. I am. I'll be up in Detroit.
Oh, yeah, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to go after this next segment because I got I'm a college professor, and this is that time of year. You know what I'm talking about, where you got
to
grade those final papers.
But listen, I'm going to stay in touch with you. I'll be up in the D pretty soon, and so I'm going to give you a call when I get up
there. Please do. Please do. I would love to take you out to lunch. If you're here on a Saturday, we'll have you on our radio show. I have a radio show I co-host with, do you know Pastor LaVon Ewell? He has a radio show here in Detroit called Joshua's Trail.
No.
Okay, yeah, it's a black radio show. It's probably one of the few black conservative radio shows in the Metro Detroit area, and we'd love to have you as a guest.
Well, I would love to do that, and I'll give you a call and let you know when I'm going to be there again. Because I'm often there.
That'll be great. I'd love to meet you.
But I want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come and hang out with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure.
And you're always welcome. Please let us know when you want to come on, because we do this every day, Monday through Friday, from noon until 3.
Oh, and thank you very much.
And it's important that we understand that we begin to get this message out, not just to the black audience or the white audience, but America at large.
Yes.
Because it affects everyone when it affects one.
Yes.
And I don't think we understand that. There is no Black America. There is no White America. And yes, we do need to talk about race and racism because it is still prevalent, but we don't deal with the root of it.
No, exactly. And the root, it's a painful mirror to look into because when you look in that mirror, you see yourself. And, you know, I think back, you know, of Martin Luther King, and he was a great, great champion, and, you know, that famous I Have a Dream speech, and that was probably the you know, up until that time, the only time a Black man was able to get that kind of an audience, you know, the eyes of the world was on him for that speech. But I wish he would have used the philosophy of Booker T. Washington, the great conservative of the early 1900s, rather than the philosophy of W.E.B. Du Bois. Because the philosophy of W.E.B. Du Bois is the philosophy of the NAACP, the group he founded, which is agitate, 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 be in the face of white folks for your rights. There's a problem with that philosophy. It don't put no kind of onus on you. What are you as a Black man, you as a Black woman, going to do to get your life together? That's Booker T. Washington. That's Black conservatism that we're trying to do, Tracy. You're doing an excellent job on your radio show, and I'm trying to do with my radio show here in Metro Detroit. But that's a hard message. And
it is.
That's a message that's not going to get the big crowds cheering. And so King took the easy road, in my view. I mean, I'm not trying to belittle his martyrdom. He paid for it with his life. But that speech, I wish he would have used the philosophy, the self-help philosophy of Booker T. Washington, rather than the agitation philosophy of Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois.
I'm a Frederick Douglass girl.
Yes, me too. I love
him. And I think that the knowledge of independence, you know, I read something earlier, and it was stating that, you know, oh, I was listening to something earlier. No, let me give me who it was. It was Al Sharpton. No, it was on the MSNBC cliff quotes that they have between segments.
Yes.
And it was talking about how can a person who has everything go to school and compete with someone who has nothing and go to school.
Yes.
But when I look at Frederick Douglass, when I look at George Washington Carver, when I look at the people who had nothing but a candle and a book, and
yes,
they were trying to risk their lives to learn,
yes,
they attained more with that candle and that one book,
mm-hmm,
and fought their way out than a lot of people who have everything today. And somehow we have to erase and erode this entitlement mentality. I don't have to have everything to do what I need. All I have to have is the will to want what I got to get.
Yes.
And if we
could
ever put that drive back in the people,
yes,
you can accomplish anything. I know people who don't have the education. They can't even read well.
Mm-hmm.
But they're some of the most successful business people I know. If you look at some of these farmers,
yes,
you can't take them and put a computer in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they know when they pick up the dirt in their hand, what's wrong with it?
Right. How much fertilizer it needs, what's the pH balance. They
yeah,
know it.
They
and
know.
And that crop will be over your head in a few more weeks because those they know. It's like
yeah,
the grandma that takes a little smidgen of this and a smidgen of that. She don't
know
nothing about no cookbooks and fancy Cuisinart mixers and all of that.
No.
But
they can make a biscuit.
You eat one of her biscuits, you almost want to turn around and smack whoever's next to you and take theirs. Is that good?
I mean, they had something.
That's that knowledge that the slaves used to sing about when they would say, steal away, steal away, steal away to Jesus, steal away home. I ain't got long to stay here. That was a radical song. It was a song that was forbidden. It was a coded song talking about freedom, even when they was in chains. Here we are, supposedly free, and we
lost
are singing about
chains.
Song of slavery, like Beyonce's Bow Down and that crap. That's what I was talking about in my article. She's talking about Bow Down.
Bow Down to what?
Song. Yeah, she's talking to her enemies to bow down, and she calls them the B word, okay?
What kind of, listen to the mentality of that.
Yeah, right.
Listen to them, and we acknowledge it. We allow our young ladies to idolize her
yes.
as she slides across the floor
yes.
at a Super Bowl.
Right.
Yet we put Whitney Houston in a grave.
Right.
And all she did was stand there and sing.
Right. And I have a music background, Tracy. I've worked on a PhD in music history. So I know about music. I know about keys and relationships of notes and stuff like that. Those people aren't musicians. They're just screamers. If you were to stop Whitney Houston or Beyonce in the middle of a song and say, "Sweetheart, what key are you in? Did that piece modulate from one key to another? What voice quality?" You know, if you had asked her some simple music questions like that, she wouldn't know what you was talking about. It'd be like you was speaking Chinese, because she has educated people with degrees to write her music for her and tell her what note to sing. She doesn't know what she's singing, yet she makes millions of dollars being a musical illiterate.
Hold on, but your president's wife says,
yes,
if she could be someone else,
yes,
she wants to be Beyonce.
Oh my God.
So you got a Harvard grad lawyer.
A Harvard Law School graduate.
didn't she even say she wanted her kids to emulate her?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just want you to understand that.
Oh my God.
Now, let me get this straight. You got the wife of the most powerful man on the planet wanting his kids to emulate a woman who's squirming around on a stage with no clothes on.
Right.
Makes sense.
See, Tracy, that's why they kicked you out of Detroit. That's why they did it. You're a troublemaker.
You see, you ought to see me when I go over to Big B's.
Oh my God.
See, you
I love
know,
it.
That was an
I
insight.
Love it. It's so
you understand that. I go over to Big B's and we have a good time.
you keep on
I can't
talking.
Wait to come
it's
back.
So refreshing. Yes.
I can't wait to come back because I'm getting ready to go to Big D's and tell him I told you so. He was a thug.
Yes, yes, definitely.
I mean, and you know, it breaks my heart because and I know you've got to go in a few minutes because I'm going to take another break. But tell me what you think as the first African American when you look at the history and how it will be written. How do you think?
Oh, boy. You know, that's a
You're
very
a black
good,
man.
Yes, and I'm actually a historian, too. I'm a constitutional law scholar, and I'm also a music historian. On my website, you'll be able to see a four-volume dictionary of international dictionary of black music and musicians from antiquity, like 2,000 years before Christ, all the way up to the 20th century. I worked on this book for over 25 years with a very good historian friend of mine, and you'll see the link up there on my website. Ellis Washington Report. But to answer your question, Tracy, it's a very astute question, and I probably won't be able to do it justice. But let me just take a stab at it. Because of the progressives dominating the academy, especially since the early 1900s, the history books are going to be whitewashed and sanitized to make Obama look like the second coming of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. That's what I think is going to happen. Matter of fact, Obama's already given them their marching orders when he was campaigning. In his first campaign, he was saying that he was going to bring back, he wants his administration to be FDR's New Deal Part 2. And
but
we
now,
know
now,
what happened
on,
with the
now,
New Deal. Yeah.
But look now, though, that was pre-Benghazi IRS.
Yeah, okay,
see,
throw that in.
See, you remember, he was the savior pre, but now
right.
This is going to be post-Benghazi IRS AP.
Yeah, but look
what,
at look
what
at
do
Bill,
we write now?
Clinton. Yeah, but look at Bill Clinton.
That
he
was just a winky.
He's the most honest statesman, even though Monica Lewinsky is a stain on his record. Wherever he goes, he's giving rock star treatment. I'm sure he has a gang of babes waiting for
but
him
Ellis,
at each
Ellis,
hotel
but that
room.
Was a winky.
Yeah,
but that was
something else.
Winkies can get passes.
Right, But it's not Benghazis and APs and IRS.
Come on now. Come on now. There's a little bit difference here. That wasn't
right.
A winky moment. It wasn't a blue dress.
I hope they tell the full truth on them and let history, as JFK said, be the final judge of our deeds. That's what I hope.
Well, listen, Ellis, I love you and I appreciate you.
Thank
you. I'm going to have
you
back.
Too, my sister.
I will tell you this, as an African-American female.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look at Martin Luther King, he had his issues that I probably will agree with some and not agree with all.
Okay.
And even when I look at Malcolm X.
Yes.
I'm an evangelical, so you know me and the Nation of Islam do not walk down the street on
That's
the same
right.
side.
Me too.
But I have great things that I can say about the things that he did.
Yes.
I have major issue with the President of the United States of America right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the history book that I see, I'm ashamed of the representation. It's almost like when you look at the sniper in D.C.
Yes.
That was out the trunk of the car and you hid your head because
right.
you always say, I hope he ain't black.
Oh, I was praying that he wasn't.
And when I look at President Obama, I think the photo picture that they take is
mm-hmm.
absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
They look like, he had the opportunity to do so much.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think he gave it away.
He did. Oh, boy. Beautifully said, Tracy.
I think he gave it away. And
yes,
that bothers me because I know this, when we talk about race in America, you know, I say race is I'm an American, but I know that I'm black, and I haven't
yes.
forgotten that.
That's right.
But white people look at black people in stereo, and they look at white people independently.
Yes. And that's unfortunate, and that's unfair.
But it's real.
It's real.
It's real.
Yes, ma'am.
And we say it when we go to work. A white
yeah.
man can get drunk and pass out on the bar stool.
Right.
A black man can fall off a bar stool. And what story will you remember?
Right.
It makes a difference. And I have issues. And
yes.
he still did not do anything for the people that put him in.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't.
If black people had not switched from Hillary to Obama in the primary, he would not be sitting in the Oval Office.
Right. They
That's
were the key
true.
Voting block. You're right about
Absolutely.
That. It was a key voting
Absolutely.
Block that put him over the hump because it was neck and neck for a
Absolutely.
Long time.
Absolutely.
Hey, Tracy, would black people have went to Obama without Kennedy? Was that the turning point?
No. It was civil rights. Civil rights was a contentious time, and I say this often, Republicans were mainly stupid.
Well, yeah.
They did, Republicans are stupid.
I'm talking about in the primaries.
Oh, no. No, the primaries, this is all about the black swing. Remember, they swing the vote. If they had stayed on Hillary's side, Hillary would have walked
that's
in.
That's what I'm saying. If Kennedy hadn't have endorsed Obama.
No, it had nothing to do with that.
Okay.
When they figured out that he could win, and the pendulum swung, everybody swung. Remember, because if you weren't on with us,
right.
But Sharpton was talking about he's our people but not our kind because he
right.
decided not to go to Tavis Smiley's State of the Union.
And,
right.
and that was and he did his opening, he did his announcement in Springfield, Illinois, the same day as Tavis Smiley's State of the Union. And the black people in America had a problem with Barack Obama,
mm-hmm.
the junior senator. But then when they figured that he could win, everybody went with him except for Stephanie Tubbs Jones out of Cleveland, because that was Hillary's girl.
Okay.
And the pendulum swung, and when it swung in all of the key states, which knocked Hillary out of the box. That's why when the media swung with them,
mm-hmm.
because the pendulum, everybody swung together, and Hillary got down crying down in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Clinton started talking about carrying water and coffee. And fairy tale.
Yeah, but Jesse Jackson wanted to remove his manhood, too.
But and again, the manhood thing stopped.
Right.
You know, because they found that he was a contender, and it was a live mic, and he said it out loud, but he couldn't say that out loud now.
No.
Why not? I can. I thought we were free.
But
you're not a
Democrat.
Hold on, Philadelphia. I've got to let Ellis go. Ellis, I love you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Washington, you can find him at... Oh, let me get this back.
The Ellis Washington Report.
The Ellis, not the, www.elliswashingtonreport.com. ELLIS, Washington as in the state, and report on the end.com. You can find him at WNB. Thank you so much. I love you. Alabama, I'll pick you up as soon as I come back from my break. Caller, I'm going to pull you in as soon as I get a chance. I'll see you on the other side.
This hour of America's Morning News is brought to you by Clayton Heating and Air Conditioning, the Valley's number one choice for heating.
to Tracy and Friends on Newstalk 600 WSOM.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM. Alex, what did you say to the state of Philadelphia to make him run off? Jeez, old man. The number is 347-945-5229, and Sticks and I are here in the studio. And we want to thank Ellis Washington for coming and hanging out with us. Alex, what did you do?
I didn't say anything to him. I don't know.
You just ran him off. You got to tell me the secret.
That's funny. Yeah, I don't know. I guess he ain't feel like talking no more, you know.
But, you know, as I was saying, you know, I'm afraid how history will be written with this.
You know, I don't, I'm really not. I mean, well, I'm way over the, I guess you could say, the black-white paradigm thing. And I know people say, you know, I feel like there's probably never going to be another black president again after Obama because it's just going to be so bad. I'm a Marcus Garvey man. You know, he had the most successful movement of any African American or any African or black person in America ever. You know, bigger than Malcolm X, bigger than Martin Luther King, Elijah Muhammad, Nation of Islam, any of them. You know, and I think that's really where we need to go, where we focus on our own business and our own diplomatic and political relations with, within our own organizations. And I just don't think that we can be worried about this black paradigm thing, because as long as we're thinking that way, then we'll always, I guess, kind of be we'll always be trapped in by the opinion of the mainstream America, and that's the exact thing that we need to escape.
I agree, but I see them playing it. You know, I when I played the Julian Bond clip. And they didn't nail him on that. They didn't nail him on that, which means they want people to continue to think that this could possibly be part of a racist move against the Obama administration because of what's going on. I don't get that. I don't get how they get racism out of Benghazi, IRS, and AP.
I do. I mean, it's quite clear to me.
Explain to me.
Because, I mean, it's now, in many ways, I think Obama is the worst president we've ever had, and I mean ever. But at the same time, what's irritating and funny and just quite ridiculous at the same time is that the people attacking him, bringing this stuff up, namely the Republicans, they don't even bring up the serious stuff like the drones or you know, things. They don't even bring that stuff up. They go along with it, but then they want to nitpick on things that even Bush did and did it, you know, like Benghazi. I mean, we had more of our embassies were attacked under Bush, and more people were killed under Bush than Obama. But you want to nitpick that, but you don't want to say anything about these drones or CISPA, you know, or all these other things. You go along, Republicans go along with our freedoms being taken away, but you know, all the egregious things, Democrats and Republicans, they're on board with that stuff.
But,
you know,
but
so when you nitpick on things that, you know, like Benghazi, it's like, well, what other reason would you be doing it? It must be because he's black. I mean, come on. Bush had all these embassies that were attacked, all these people killed. Really, my God, the black man can't do anything.
But you know,
I mean,
that's
how it comes off. That's
but let me ask
off.
You this. This is the issue that I have. And see, under Bush, people may have died, but the phone call didn't say stand down.
Yeah, that's what I thought the issue was with this
issue,
whole Benghazi
the issue
thing.
Was
not
about them dying. The issue was how he handled that dying. And when you call, when you're, if everybody had gone and everyone had died, it would have been different. But for everybody, for me to call and ask you for help and to tell you my safe house is not safe and you tell me stay home, that's the
issue.
I don't
know.
And not only that, and then when it comes out and you know that this was a terrorist attack on 9/11, and you blame it on a movie.
Yeah, that's what I thought the issue was. Not so much the fact that the attack happened, was the fact that they did nothing to protect these guys. I mean,
they didn't
scramble a first fighter jet.
Yeah, but this, how about this? Because this came up a lot during Bush's tenure. When they invaded Iraq, you had people who were not in the military, who were contractors working for the government, getting beheaded. And I've seen some of these videos. They were, I mean, gruesome. And a lot of people felt like, you know, something should have been done about that. And, you know, and the White House even made some statements about that, and they did nothing about it. You know, and there were times where they could have prevented things like that from happening. You know, and they chose not to do anything there when you had people not even, you know, working for the State Department or not even in the military, but just being kidnapped. There were countless contractors and Americans that were killed. I mean, I've seen more videos than I care to remember of people being beheaded.
I wasn't aware of this. Now, when you say contractors, are you talking like the Blackwater types, or are you talking about like cooks and truck drivers?
All different kinds. I mean, some were engineers, some were, you know, working on oil pipelines. I mean, you know, they're going to capture whoever they can get, whether it's a cook or an electrician or whatever. You know, they didn't care. They just knew
okay.
It was an American, so they wanted to kill him. You know, so.
But this happened all the time, and Bush did nothing.
People's families were sending letters to the White House, and Bush ignored them.
But nobody's going to bring that up and make a big old drama, and I have not seen them, so I cannot call you. I cannot say that I disagree with you. But it's one thing for me to call you and be an ambassador. It's another thing for me to target your groups, and I said, you know, to target you if through the IRS because I think you're a libertarian and I want to slow you down, shut you down, or make you go away.
And the environmental.
It's another thing for me to seize and to subpoena the Associated Press in the cloak of at night and cover it with national security. All those things. Is it because he's black?
Yeah, because I'll tell you why.
Huh?
Because you said nothing when it was Bush. Because Bush would threaten. He threatened the L.A. Times. And a couple other news organizations that they would never be invited back to the White House because one reporter made a mistake of asking the question.
Alex, it's not a wiretap.
It doesn't matter. It's the same.
Hold on.
Let's back up for a second.
Yeah.
I agree
one is
that
illegal,
it's not the
one
same. Yeah,
I can tell you that I'm never going to invite you to my house again. It's another thing for me to say.
No, that's death. That's a death sentence to any news organization not to have access to the news. Come on, here's the thing. Let's agree on one thing: the government is only force. That's all
right.
It is, and
right.
So it is a threat of force. Now, whether it's, you know, whether they do subpoena or they do go by any other means, anything the government does is force. And in some ways it's a threat, and sometimes it's a threat. And so Bush had literally threatened our news organizations to comply. Don't ask me any tough questions, otherwise you won't get any news. And you know what? No one will watch your station anymore, and your advertising will go away, you'll wither away and die. And so Bush made that threat of force to news organizations. So really, I don't see what method of force you use, what mechanism of force you use. I'm not gonna, you know, harp on that or you know, put too much energy on which method of force you use. It's all force. That's all the government is.
So in your opinion, legal force is different than illegal force. There's the same thing as illegal force.
Yes, when it's orchestrated by the government.
I mean,
yeah, force. It doesn't matter because because what Nazi Germany did was legal force. When we put Japanese Americans into concentration camps, you know, you would think it would be illegal, but it really doesn't matter. When the government does it, it's force. It doesn't matter if it's legal or illegal.
And so you think that they did this because he was black? And if he wasn't black, you're trying to, because see, I got to go back to this thing, because I don't see the color thing in it. When I see, if Democrats had known about Bush doing what he did, they'd have said more, but they didn't say anything because he was white. But now since Obama's black, we're just gonna let this happen. I don't follow that. I don't follow Julian Bond talking about the Tea Party, them being like the Taliban, the Tea Party equalizing them to the Taliban. I don't get that. I know I'm a little warped in my thinking, but I don't follow that. And I think I follow race pretty well.
I think that if Republicans had integrity, then they wouldn't be come under fire those charges. Because like I said, they don't say anything about the other violations of our freedoms, like these internet laws that they're trying to pass, and again the drones and the
Alex, we're not talking about the disingenuousness of the Republican Party. The issue that I have is, how does racism get played into this?
Because
Republicans are disingenuous because they don't go after drones, they don't go after Monsanto, they don't go after this, they don't go after the other freedoms. You know, right now I'm reading an article as we're talking in reference to how they went, the Department of Justice doesn't need a warrant to go after my email accounts nor my Facebook chat. They can go after anything that they want to go after without my permission and without a subpoena. I'm reading that article right now and how it violates. Okay, they don't go. But what does that have to do with the color of my skin?
Because what other reason do you have a problem with this, with all these things? Because all these things went on. Because all these things went on under Bush. You didn't have a problem with it then. Why do you have a problem with
it
now?
Oh, yes. Oh, wait a minute. I did. I had a problem with the Patriot Act. I had a problem with a lot of things George Bush did.
But because you're libertarian leaning. But I'm saying mainstream Republicans, they didn't have a problem with it. All this stuff that they're complaining about went on under Bush, and they didn't say anything about it.
Ones that are screaming the loudest are not the mainstream Republicans. I wouldn't consider Rand Paul a mainstream Republican, nor Ted Cruz.
Yeah, Ted Cruz is, I don't really know a lot about him. But Rand Paul, I fear that mainstream Republicans are using him for their agenda a little bit, because he's a libertarian at heart more. He's more so a libertarian conservative at heart. I don't know. I mean, Ted Cruz, he's too new for me. I haven't warmed up to him yet.
But Alex, Rand Paul, all these people, I don't understand how we get a racism thing out of Obama and what's going on today. Because that just plays right into what MSNBC said today about this. I don't get it. I don't get this. And what it does is it polarizes the nation on something that has nothing to do with race but has something to do with politics. This is more politics than it is race. Because I promise you, if Obama was white, he would get the same scrutiny from the Republican Party just by being a Democrat in the office.
I don't know. Maybe. You're probably right, but the fact that Republicans are playing politics, Democrats are allowed to play. They can play politics too. I mean, you want to play that game, so can they. You're just getting frustrated because they're playing it better than you, is what it seems like.
But they're dropping the race card inside of this, and the race card brings a segment of the population into this conversation, and it actually distances them from the process of thinking and puts them back onto the offense of mobilizing them to move forward, because they got to make sure they got to keep things engaged. Do you realize that President Clinton did not get impeached because of the black community supporting him overwhelmingly during the process?
Well, that's not the reason why he got impeached. I mean, it doesn't matter what black people do. They don't affect anything politically.
Yes, they do. That's the problem. They don't understand what they affect, but they affect more than what they actually are. They understand. They are what you call the hidden sleeper that you only need for them to rise when you need them, and then when you don't need them, you put them back to sleep.
I mean, they only count when it comes to the popular vote in certain states with high concentrations of urban areas. That's the only time that they matter. But when it comes to general business getting done, nobody pays attention to black people because they're not in any position to execute anything, to enforce anything, or to broker any kind of deal. For anything to happen.
Let me throw this out to you really quick. In the last 48 hours, I've seen Charlie Rangel, Conyers, Julian Bond. I haven't heard a peep from them in the last year. Why are they standing on their post now?
Well, I mean,
I ain't seen Charlie Rangel since they saw him. They made him grovel on his ethics issues. So tell me, why is it now they can put him up on Front Street to come and defend and or to speak on what's going on Capitol Hill when it comes to President Obama? See, when we talk about race and racism, that's race and racism right there. They use them where they want them, but not where they need it to be. And right now they're trying to polarize the situation because they need to throw the race equation into it when it has absolutely nothing to do with race and has absolutely everything to do with the administration not knowing what they were doing in the White House to have a good oversight. Because this is all about him not knowing how to manage the departments under him.
I don't know. I mean, I think he just has different priorities. I mean, I think he manages just fine. He manages what he wants to manage just fine. Obama is a masterful politician, so he's a very intelligent man. He just has different priorities than what we do, you know.
and that's what I don't see race in this. I don't. I mean, Sticks, you're the white guy in the room.
I don't see race in this at all. I think if it was any other Democrat or any other Republican, the other side would be screaming just as loud.
Well, see,
you got to remember that it was actually the IRS thing actually started with Democrat senators.
You said the
Schumer and a
IRS.
Bunch of Democrat senators. What's that?
You said the IRS?
Yeah, the IRS investigations of Tea Party groups started with senators imploring the IRS to do it.
Yeah, I mean...
With Democrat senators.
You have abuses of power on both sides, though. And whenever, and that's the thing, whenever each party gets, they get in and they do everything that they want to do, and
we understand it.
Yeah, there's definitely an abuse of power there. But I'm sure that if you dug enough, you will see directives from Republican presidents to do questionable things as well to the departments under them.
Richard Nixon comes to mind.
So then we go back
Yeah, definitely Nixon.
So then we go back to, again, what we were saying. My question is, how does race play into this? Is it because they're actually acting like that they're going after Obama because he's an African-American and that what did he say, that the tea bag was the Taliban?
The Tea Party is the Taliban wing of the Republican Party.
Right. How do you do that? And that because they're going through all of this,
Now we've got a bunch of racists going after this poor black man who was doing a good job in trying to make America safe.
Which tells me that Julian Bond doesn't know anything about the Tea Party to start with, because the establishment Republicans hate the Tea Party.
Hey, Tracy, I'm going to tell you, and Styx, you know, I don't see particularly race either, but some of the people that speak out a lot in Republican Party, it seems like they do have some, you know, underlying feelings, negative feelings towards Obama, just because he is a black man, because of the language that they use sometimes.
Can you give me a for instance?
I'll say some things are ignorant, and I'll say some. And I'm not going to say that they're not. I'm not going to say that the whole Republican Party is in I love black people, because I'm not going to say that, and I'm a part of them. But I will also say this: the Democrats aren't in love with you either.
And there is a lot, and Alex, there is a lot of ignorant. I mean, to be honest, until I started hanging out with Tracy, to call somebody boy, and I didn't even think twice about it. I've been called boy my whole life and never thought anything about it. But I would never do that.
Yeah, but if you...
Because I had no idea.
If you call a black man a boy...
You're in trouble.
Yeah, and see, I was ignorant. I didn't know, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can get that, but...
You know?
You hear a lot of language like calling him... I mean, just really... almost juvenile, like they'll call him, like I've heard him called an idiot, and they toss out unpresidential a lot. They toss that out a lot, and before the second election, inept, just things that make him they paint him as an unintelligent person a lot, and it just...
And that I understand, but a lot of that has to do with ignorance. And on both parts, Alex, because I have to say this. If you watch, and I only got about 6 minutes left, so I might as well say this out loud. When you watch white men fight, they don't fight like black men. And I watch, they go for the jugular. There are some things that I see them, and as they begin to fight for politics, and not this fight, I'm talking about fight as far as politics or fight as far as business. These guys are brutal. They're mean.
That's true. I mean, I think that may be a cultural thing, because I've noticed that as well, just professionally.
Right.
White men and women too, but just white people in general. The way that they can argue and fight. Like, I know if two black people argued the same way, they would not be able to speak for probably...
Ever.
At least a couple weeks or something. But it happens all the time. I'll get into heated arguments, professional arguments, nothing like, silly, but professional arguments. And, then literally 5 minutes later, we're back good again, and but for whatever reason, that just doesn't happen with black folks, not black men, definitely. There's a certain language that we're just not used to using.
And that's what I'm saying. And when they go to fight against another culture, culturally different, or get to go to talk about President Obama culturally different, it may come off as racist, but that's how they fight. I mean, they throw mama under the train
and roll
over her.
And I recognize that, too, because, they were relentless against Bush. I mean, they called him all kinds of terrible names, saying he was
the dumbest
so
man
stupid.
Alive.
Yeah, yeah, but it comes off different when they
talk to a black man, right. So is it race? I mean, so how do I play the race card when it's a cultural difference that we really need to have a conversation about on another day? Because we need to understand they ain't racist. That's just how they fight. And
yeah.
Because if you put Obama in a white suit and put a D on his forehead, they're going to still go after his jugular. We went after Clinton for having a winky. Come on now. And the guy who went after him for having a winky was having a winky. Gingrich? Hello?
Yeah.
Come on now. The winky went after the winky for having a winky inside of the White House. Come on.
Yeah, but Bill Clinton was the first black president.
Doesn't matter. Newt Gingrich went after him, and he was having a winky on the side. That's why
half of Washington, D.C. is having a winky.
That's what I'm saying. So how can you go after a man for having a winky when you know that Kennedy had many winkies, and then you want to blame going after him for this because he's black? Come on now. Every man that I know, if you put a camera in front of him and a microphone and say, did you cheat with this woman, they're not going to say yes.
Unless they've already talked to their wife about it ahead of time.
You're not going to go home. She's not going to watch that on TV.
That's right.
And have to go home. I'll take the beating in public. Just don't call home. Can you imagine?
The only way a guy's going to fess up to that is if he's already told his wife.
Absolutely.
And then
that's something different. That's something different once I get home. Can you imagine what happens if Bill goes home and Hillary watches it on television?
She'll pull a Willie Nelson's wife on him.
Willie Nelson? She'll turn black on him.
You know what Willie Nelson's wife did to him?
What?
Rolled him up a bedsheet and beat him with a broom handle.
Oh, no. He would pull a what you call an Al Green.
What's that?
Pour grits on him in the tub.
What's that?
Hot grits.
Hot grits
right off the stove. It's sticks to you.
You understand. You can't. That's something different. The wrath of a woman at home that called your wife? You're not gonna. They went after him because he had a winky, and they were all having winkies.
Well, yeah,
politics. Politics as usual.
People who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Yeah, but they threw more stones in a little bit. So, will you really think that they went after Obama because he was a colored man? Come on, now. This is politics, not because he's black, but because he's president.
Yeah, they're winning the rhetoric, the war of rhetoric right now.
Who is?
The Democrats, you know, they're winning they control the rhetoric right now. 8 years ago, Republicans controlled the rhetoric and Democrats were frustrated. I can recall that at the State of the Black Union with Tavis Smalley, the Republicans controlled the rhetoric then, but now Democrats control the rhetoric. So
hey, Alex, I'm gone. Goodbye. I love you. I'll see you tomorrow. Right. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about schizophrenia. And tomorrow Mark Mangi will be with us and we're going to have a great time. Look forward to hearing from you. God bless you and have a good day.
SOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren. The home for afternoons with Tracy and friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Convicted of kidnapping and armed robbery, is fighting for a new trial. ABC's Alex Stone is there.
Simpson is doing what he did not do 4.5 years ago, explaining why.